Welcome back. It's Friday Night Sports Talk with your host, Ray Bishop, on Urban Māori Radio Wātea, 6:03 a.m.
Kia ora whānau, nau mai hoki mai ki tēnei hōtaki ringi te Wātea o nore mātoru te erere. I tēnei wā, tino honore māku ki te kōrero pāna ki ngā tangata rongonui o te Aoriki. Mr. Monty Beetham joins us here on the Friday Night Sports Talk. Brother Monty, welcome into the show. What an honour for me to have a chat with you about the world of sport. Obviously, you know, league is the way that you made your name, and you're one of the things I enjoy about the career that you've had, brother, is the way that it's translated into the world of media. It's so good to have expert commentary, you know, when we're watching league on TV these days. But I guess in comparison to some of the Australian version, it's nice to know that we've got some very astute rugby league minds articulating our sport. How are you finding the change from the rugby field to commenting on league and in the television presenting role, bro?
Yeah, kia ora, e hoa. It's been too long, mate. It's been too long, Ray. It felt like it's been. Sometimes I feel like I never even played the game. Even finishing boxing and coming out of that, and being privileged to get into the role of doing broadcasting, whether that be talking rugby league commentary of late, or even just doing expert analysis, or even doing boxing commentary, and even 2016, the Olympic Games over there in Rio, and was one of the broadcasters there, which was something that was never on my radar, because obviously it was nothing that I ever thought I'd do as an athlete, let alone a broadcaster. So I've been very privileged, but to be close to home, and you know, when I made a living out of the great game of rugby league, it's nice to give back and let the people at home know some of the insights to what I was able to experience in a wonderful sport.
No, absolutely. And obviously, we talk about your, if we go back and touch the subject of the Vodafone Warriors, how was it for you in your time in Jersey with the Warriors? It's, you know, the way that you played, the way that you captained was certainly loved. It was great days. Great days when you could still throw them, bro. There's a bit of biff around the place. And it was, they were great days, weren't they?
There were some good games, some good eras. You know, that's why I really pitched to Sky Sport having Once a Warrior, which was having some of the legends who paved the ways early on, some of the OGs from early on, and some of the later years to come on and talk, give us the insight and hear their untold stories, and to see them still talk about our club and being passionate for guys like Ryan Hoffman and PJ Marsh and all these types of people. I mean, these are the ones that have been legends of the club, Kevin Campion, because they've cared so much, and that still stands today. So, you know, back then it was really good because they predominantly had a lot of local talent who grew up dreaming of being Warriors, seeing them play at Mount Smart and wanting to be in that position. And I remember from an early age when I signed a scholarship at 15 for the club, and then playing under-19s in the grand final for the club and so on, with a number of other guys who went on to do some good things. I always dreamt of one day being able to captain this team and obviously win a premiership. You know, that's eluded everyone so far in the 27 years of the club. But, you know, in terms of the care and the love for that jersey and for this country that is behind the Warriors, that hasn't changed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like you say, you mentioned some of those amazing, you know, those Australians that have committed, when they committed themselves to our club, and I'll use the word our club because I love it still. You know, inside that space, it's, I guess in the professional era, you can come from anywhere and be passionate about it. But you know, what was your take of the way that the Aussies came over here and brought their thinking to the Warriors? But how did you find that? How did you find their love, their commitment to basically a New Zealand franchise?
Oh, look, the best ones, the ones that really embraced the culture and embraced being this country and everything about it, with the likes of PJ Marsh, Mark Tukey, Kevin Campion, even though some of them weren't here for a very long time. PJ Marsh was only here for 35 games, yet he still speaks about the club glowingly. And he left a legacy behind. And that's the thing. We've heard of some people of late who don't want to travel all over and don't want to stay here. But the ones that do come over and that have been successful have loved it, and they still got fond memories and talk about it highly when they leave. It's a beautiful place. We've got a beautiful stadium that we play at, and our culture, which is aligned with the people, the fans, are just amazing. You know, to walk out of that tunnel and to hear the drums beating on occasion, or just to hear our fans roar. I mean, we were there for the homecoming game not too long ago, 3rd of July. It was unreal. You know, I had almost had tears in my eyes to see that happening after 3 years. It's been too long.
Yeah, and that was a really interesting point, bro. Close to 60 games the Warriors played away from home. I'm not sure that any other NRL team would have probably handled it the way that we did, bro. What are your thoughts?
1,038 days since they played at home, which was just unreal, unbelievable. And, people still don't understand the sacrifice that these boys have made, and that's on this side of the ditch and even on the other side of the ditch. One can sort of get some feel to what it could be like, but no one really knows how dark it can get and how lonely it can get and how scary it can be on that side of the ditch. And anyone who's played in the game or the jumper before or has played in our history has never experienced what these guys have done through this pandemic. So it's a unique group. And it's been a tough time, but you got to admire them because they've kept this competition together.
Yeah, I think so too. And like you say, that homecoming game was just—you could tell the enthusiasm was electric. The way that they performed, the way that they kept the West Tigers scoreless as well, which was certainly a testament to the fans that turned up. And you could see the boys—they were just a different team, you know—to be able to come out of, like you say, out of that tunnel. Into the environment that is home, and you know, obviously some of those players had never experienced what it was like to be a Warrior apart from being at home. But you know, as a fan, man, it was just so great to have our team back at Mount Smart. It was just and like you say, bro, you know, the tears that were maybe with you guys from being people that have played in the jersey. There is so much for fans to celebrate on that first game.
It was amazing, man. Like there'll be some people and that I haven't seen for a couple of years or 3 years, and then there's the normal sort of rituals that you'd have when you go to game day, when you go across certain potential people, and you normally see them each week in, week out when they do play at home, and you miss that. And you came across seeing these sort of people again. You saw tears in their eyes, or you saw their eyes lit up because they were so passionate about seeing their boys at home again, which was an amazing experience, man. And I tell you what, if that game wasn't at home, I don't think the Warriors wouldn't have beaten the Tigers. The Tigers were in great form, and they just turned up, and they were relentless, and they were bashing us, and they were really at the top of their game where they should be. So if we weren't at home, I seriously don't think we would have won that. I think that crowd got us through, as well as the obviously the hype and coming home and playing at home and what they wanted to do for the fans.
Yeah, if we look, there's a few games left for the remainder of the season. How do you think? What are your kind of predictions on the way that we'll kind of finish the year, given the given the start that we had and the vibe and losing Nathan Brown and then Stacey taking over? What do you think would be our best outcome for the 2022 season? Given that we've got the opportunity to come home now, teams have got to face us over here. How do you think? What do you think your prediction will be for the way that we will finish this year, bro?
Yeah, well, you'd never do really know, but I'll tell you what: you've got three games at home. You've got Melbourne Storm next Friday night. Obviously, we play Canberra tomorrow, but you've got Melbourne Storm, who obviously did a number on us last time out. They're not going to have Brandon Smith. They're not going to have Pappenhausen. Those two are injured. There's a few sort of other key guys out, so it's a good time to answer back, return serve. Sure. Against them, but the other two games in terms of the Bulldogs and also Titans last game at home, which is Old Boys Day, those are very winnable games. And you know, like if you could win three out of four games at home or four out of four games at home, because we know what we've been able to produce against the likes of the Melbourne Storm, and belief is one thing that, you know, when you're at home, you've got plenty of it. I mean, that would be a wonderful way to finish off the season. And just obviously win more games than you lose, and I think that would just bode well for next year. You know, it's a young squad still.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Obviously, you know, the your time in that very special Kiwi jersey, bro, is on the line again this year. It'd be great to get your thoughts as the Kiwis head towards that Rugby League World Cup. Can I cast your mind back to that game against Tonga? What were your thoughts on that Kiwi team, bro? I thought that was one of the best teams we've had for a wee while, for the way that they played. I thought they were pretty magnificent on the night.
I don't think anyone would disagree with you, Ray. And that's on this side of the ditch, or on that side, or even up north and far up in England, because I tell you, in the Northern Hemisphere, because first and foremost, Maguire picked on form, and you had wonderful guys that were in form. Even though it was a very inexperienced spine, Dylan Brown making his debut, he was electric, he was amazing, he didn't try and overplay his hand. Joey Manu, I couldn't believe it. You know, like 300-plus metres. What can't this kid do? He's a wonder kid. And, you know, like, if you think about Tedesco, you think about Trbojevic and all these guys and what they're doing in the fullback position, million-dollar players. Joey Manu proved in that game, and he's proved since, that this kid is just a wonderful talent that could just be a world beater. There's a lot to like about this team, the middle in particular, which was nice. You know, these guys, Fisher Harris, in absolute fine form. Asafa Solomona, Jesse Bromwich, who came back and he led the team. And Tapani, wow. I mean, he's been the premier prop in the competition. So the fact that, you know, they've picked on-form players that are doing wonderful things, I thought it was going to be a lot closer, but it was a very dominant display from this Kiwi side. And, you know, we know the Kiwi side gets better when they're on tour, when they're living together. And, you know, this World Cup excites me, because there's a good Tour Samoa team coming up, and some of those Origin players are going to go back and play for them. Matima Tonga is going to be good. Aussie, we know, is always going to be good. But going into that match and seeing what the Kiwis were able to do against Matima Tonga, man, it makes us all very, very proud.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I thought, you know, the before the game started, if you're keeping Solomona on the bench, that's a pretty good team. That was my gauge as to how I thought the Kiwis were going to do. And I think they went out and they played, like you say, it was really lovely to have Dylan Brown there. I thought his job, I kind of wondered where how the feel would be if Sean was in the team. I think he would have still been able to add something too, but I thought the way that Dylan played was magical. But, you know, I guess, like you say, the taking that form into the next World Cup is going to be a good thing. All of those Pacific Island nations are certainly strong, because of the NRL gives everybody the opportunity to hone their craft and then take it to the World Cup. Would you still rate Aussie number one, Kiwis number two, or how would you place us in that ladder?
I think Kiwis and Aussies equally are going to be the teams to watch out for. We know that we're seeing the Origin series, and we know that's how a lot of them form their combinations, even if it's in their colours, maroons and the sky blue, that which sort of these little combinations can come together. Like, you might have the middle of the New South Wales team, you might have one left edge, which is predominantly the Origin team, but that's just the way they'd be playing that type of football over that Origin series, just puts them in good stead for the end of the year. But you know, they're going to be a force. But this Kiwi side, it's been a while since I've had such high hopes and feel so strongly and confident about what the side can do in that black jumper.
Can we turn our focus to one of your good mates? His name is Stacey Jones. He's in charge of the Warriors at the moment. How are you seeing your buddy do that? I think, you know, it's the job's fallen on great shoulders, a great mind, a great a great example of a great New Zealander that has played rugby league. But how do you think Stacey's going in the role, bro? And it was one of the neat things I liked at the homecoming game, was to see their box just filled with all those legends, the Campions and the Arwens, you know. And obviously, if you weren't commentating, you'd be in the box as well with the bro. So it was so neat to see those guys around Stacey. What are your thoughts on the way that he's taking up that role?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, to me, he's still the greatest warrior of all time. Simon Mannering is a close second. But those guys and the service that they've given, and when Stacey showed this loyalty to the club when every other team wanted him and he could have gone for so much more money, just shows, he lives and breathes it. He's taken on this role in these hard times, but it's perfect because in the hard times, if you want to get advice or listen to a coach that has been there, done it before, and has, been that guy that you've grown up watching and loved very much, I think that's the guy to bring you forward. It's good to see that box. The Warriors are trying to go back to the roots and have a couple of the three ambassadors. Armand Goodenbill's one, myself is one, and then also Kevin Campion. So it's a bit of a loose term, but we get a chance to do a little bit more with the club and some of the players, which is amazing. But I think Stacey's going well. He obviously made a tough decision this week, which was a good decision, I believe, and putting Shanell Harris-Tavita at the back. He was outstanding against the Tigers, and in terms of that all-around effort that you want from a fullback, because defensively, you get a lot of confidence when you're seeing people coming up with stops. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck used to do that a lot defensively, and when he'd stop a tackle or be in the right place at the right time, you grow an arm and a leg from it. And I think, while Reece has really got a great skill set and deadly with the ball in hand, attack is his huge focus. You've got to think about the all-round approach and what you can do defensively and making sure you're in the right position. So, Shanell Harris-Tavita, it's a shame that he wants to have a break, but in terms of a contributor, in terms of a fierce competitor who's just wants to compete every time, he's that kid, mate. He's the wonder kid. So it'll be good because then you get a fresh Reece Walsh coming off the bench, or you get a Reece Walsh that feels he's got a point to prove. That's only going to be good for the side.
I was thinking about that, with Chanel leaving. That, in this modern age of rugby league, that's an awesome thing to do, to choose kind of just to step away. It doesn't have to be at the height of his career. He's just, but like you say, he's a wonder kid. But I kind of marvel at his choice to just step away. It's pretty cool to see a young man kind of have that confidence in himself, Monty, and treat the game that he wants, treat the game in the manner that he wants it to fit to his life, not the other way around.
It just shows you the mana of this young kid. He's got a very mature head on his shoulders. I mean, he's only played just over 50 games, and I just think this kid is such a wonderful player. He's playing more like someone who's played 100 games. But, he would have wrestled with that idea for a very, very long time. And to come out and tell his family and his friends and everyone else is huge. And, a lot of people would have let that get the better of him, but the person that he is, he's decided to stand true by that. I'm told he's a very, very smart kid, very talented kid who could do anything he wanted to. So he's going to take a bit of time off, do a bit of writing, and who knows, he might come back. And let's hope he does, because he's a wonderful player, mate. I enjoy watching him play.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly buoyed by the way that you comment. Around his game, and it just gives you insight to just actually pay that beautiful attention to how he goes about his work and just how committed he is to every kind of every play. Inside that, you mentioned when we started the show about your opportunity to go across to the Olympics. What was that like for you? As a journalist, obviously you're getting a chance to mix in the space of incredible athletes. That must have been a pretty amazing experience for you.
It was. It was, especially going to Rio and being over there and, in a country like that where there's real poverty and there's real wealth and sometimes across the road from each other was unreal. Like, it was never on my radar as a young aspiring athlete for obvious reasons that there was no sport that I wanted to be involved in that was at the Olympics. But to ever broadcast it and to go over and broadcast equestrian and be there to interview the first medalist of the game for New Zealand, which was Natalie Rooney, silver in shooting, and to talk to Sir Mark Todd and talk to a number of the athletes, Lisa Carrington, and be there on hand to to let them have their first words back to our country of Aotearoa, and let the people around the motu get insight to what they're feeling in these moments when they've made history or they've done something wonderful. It's a privilege. So, you feel a little bit of pressure to get it right and to give them that, that time that they deserve, and also the fans, we're sort of that bridge between the two in that key moment. So it's nice to do the job in that.
Yeah, hey, I was going to say that. How do you describe the machine that is Lisa Carrington?
She's not human. That's probably the best way to describe it, right? She's not human. Her mental fortitude, her ethic, process driven, high performance, all that type of stuff, and she's a very humble young lady. I've had the pleasure of interviewing her a number of times at Halberg Awards, over at the Olympics, and other sort of events. And man, she's just a lovely wahine toa with a beautiful smile, and she's the golden girl.
Yeah, it's incredible, like you say. I guess I'm feeling the same honor in terms of talking with you, bro. When we get a chance to talk with people that have given their time and commitment to a sport, and they've developed the craft, and they've got all the rewards that they could ever want from it. It is amazing. I marvel at what she's capable of. And you mentioned Mark Todd. Like, that's one of the most famous names in New Zealand sport across that equestrian that field. But there's, I guess a lot of that for with Mark, to my mind, is his longevity at success in his field. It's amazing how people can go for such a long time at that level of excellence when they're committed. How did you what were your thoughts of the way that Sir Mark Todd looked at his sport?
Yeah, look, I just, like you, I marveled because I remember being in my lounge living room with my parents when there's only two or three channels, and we're watching the Olympics, and we just were watching in awe of Sir Mark Todd and Ian Ferguson and Paul McDonald and the kayaking and everything else, and what we would do on the world stage, batting above our weight and hitting things out of the park. So to be there and to see them so many years later, just do it. I guess winning's a habit, or high performance is, like I said, a lot of people, high performance is not necessarily ability and athleticism. All it is just doing, being meticulous in your process and just getting everything right time and time again, effort on effort. And that's what high performance is. So, it's nice to see these guys who've given so much to our country and inspired so many people still being able to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to touch on, obviously last night was the big charity fights. How did you witness those last night?
Oh yeah, they are what they are. They're charity fights. You can't really do a lot in 3 2-minute rounds. But I thought everyone that was on display was doing it for the right cause, for the rangatahi out there and Mike King. I am hope, because a lot of these kids today, unfortunately, have this internal monologue going in their head that they're not good enough, that they're useless, that they can't do it. That they're going to lose, and a lot of our fighters, especially the celebrity fighters that are going into it, have that same sort of internal monologue on their journey, trying to get into the ring and fight under the lights, get through the ropes. So for them to understand and for them to help give their profile to, to shine a light on a great cause, but also raise some funds for that was awesome, man.
Absolutely. And it was a shame that I was looking forward to the Wairangi and Kevin Mialami. Have we heard how Kevin's doing?
Yeah, Kevin's good, mate. Because I'm coaching Kevin.
Oh, beautiful.
So I was coaching Kevin, and we've been working on it for a very, very long time. And the reason why I was coaching Kevin and not Wairangi was because Kevin was going to be fighting someone else, and I was training Kevin, and then that fell through. And then Wairangi come in late notice. So look, I tell you now that would have been some fight. I was training Kevin for a very, very long time. He was working so hard. He's top 2% of an athlete. But when I say that about Kevin, and his engine's out of this world. I say the same thing about Wairangi Kōpū. He is top 2% of athlete. He is a weapon. He has got mana, and that would have just been some fight, mate. So, you know, it was unlucky that we felt for Wairangi, and obviously we felt for Kevin. We were watching there last night, and we weren't able to partake in that last fight.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Does Kevin got any other aspirations outside of the charity thing, or do you think you would just wait and maybe potentially have another crack at that?
Oh, look, we wanted to, you know, we've got sponsors on board, and we wanted to have a little run at it. He's not a young man, but he's young in terms of he hasn't taken any knocks. His health is good, besides the heart that came in that day. But, you know, we want to have a bit of fun because, you know, a guy that's played 132 tests for the All Blacks and wants to push himself and get out of his comfort zone and experience that again. That's great. And, like, we worked so hard for a very long period of time. And, you know, the last hour sort of just being told you can't do it, it was heartbreaking. But that is what it is. Health is wealth.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. I think one of the X factors that young man had in his favour too is he's from the capital of New Zealand called Tokoro, bro. So, you know,
it's hard, bro.
just the way that it rolls down there. Hey, you know, how would you compare the sport of boxing to the sport of rugby league? Is it the commitment to be the best at either of those sports the same drive, the same determination, or how would you see the difference?
Oh, there's so many differences. I think the biggest difference is it's you by yourself, even though you've got your own team. So you can't have an off day and rely on one of your teammates to bring you through. You know, and when you're resting or when you're sleeping in the morning, you've got to realise that potentially your opponent isn't. And that's when you can get outdone, you can get outworked. And then it also comes down to on the actual night. But, you know, for me as an athlete out there before and as a captain, you know, there was moments then when I'd have to get people up and I'm thinking, why do you need to get up when you're playing the great game and getting paid good money and you shouldn't be having to be motivated? So for me to only worry about motivating myself when I was boxing, you know, it was an easy thing because motivation was something that I really enjoyed. But, you know, the other good thing about boxing is it's easier to plan for, because you can have a camp, you've got 8 to 12 weeks to prepare for it, and you're not going to really get a lot of injuries on the way as soon as you start playing rugby league. Besides the start of the season, that might be the last time when you're actually got no injuries. Then throughout the year, you're probably carrying injury after injury after injury, and you're doing your best just to make the field. So you know, there's a lot for both sports to admire and a lot to enjoy as well.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Monty, thank you so much for coming on to our sports show tonight, bro. Such a privilege to hear your skill set across. We're talking about broadcast, we talked about league, we talked about some boxing, and you know, and the love of sport outside of yourself, as you say, to be able to talk with Lisa Carrington about the X Factor and Mark, and to Sir Mark Todd around their X Factor as well. You had it, my friend, and I loved it. Loved watching you either in the ring or in a rugby league jersey, be it the Warriors or the Kiwis. You always fought hard, bro, and it was certainly an honour to watch you do your thing, and certainly a pleasure now to actually hear you comment. One of those things I love the most is your effort on effort, and it's when I get to understand what you're talking about. There's some amazing athletes up there, and I certainly appreciate the way that you articulate sport. You make it enjoyable, and please continue doing what you're doing, brother, and all your work that you're doing to help young people be amazing is so fantastic to marvel at, my friend. So thank you so much for your time. All the best to you and your family, and hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, Ray. Anytime, brother. And when you're talking about X Factor and you behind that mic, bro, whoa. I wish I had that talent, brother. Talk soon, man.
Okay, brother. You take care. There you go, Fano, the wonderful talents of former rugby league player, former Kiwi with the Warriors and the Kiwis, great boxer, individual boxer, great boxing coach and motivator, looking after our young ones to help point them in the right direction. Hence the Fight for Life that was on last night that Monty was coaching Kevin Mialami from Tokoro, I should add. But we're going to take a little break, but such a wonderful opportunity to have a chat with Monty about his wonderful skill set across all of those different sports and now in the world of broadcasting. So we'll be back with you very shortly. I think we're going to be having a kōrero with Mr. Paul Fatuera. He took part in the Fight for Life last night here on Radio Wātea, Friday Night Sports Talk. Kia ora.